Welcome to Waiting For You, the podcast where we talk infertility, hope, loss and courage. I'm Janine, mum of one, a newborn and family photographer and lover of dark chocolate. Here we will share stories of families who have faced a different or difficult journey through conception, pregnancy or postpartum. I want to honour these stories and have them be heard, and I want to bring it all, the tears, the hope, the despair and the joy. In this episode, I chat with Charlotte, who shares her journey of PCOS, IVF, miscarriage, and now being a mum to her two boys, and what that has taught her. Charlotte shares what it was like to access treatment being outside of a major city, and the impact of fertility treatment on her gentle heart. Charlotte's eldest son was recently diagnosed with autism, and she generously shares the signs that led to this diagnosis and how this has informed and impacted on the way they parent their little boy and the adjustments they have made in their family to help him. Here's Charlotte's story. Hi Charlotte, welcome to the podcast. Can you start by telling us a little bit about you and your family?
Yeah, so in my family is myself and my husband John. And we have two little boys, Hugo, who is nearly four, and Sullivan, who's 18 months. And we live in Orewa in Auckland.
Nice. And what kinds of things do you like doing as a family?
We're definitely quite a quiet homebody kind of family, but we like getting outdoors, especially with the boys. And we live close to the beach, so we spend a lot of time there and riding bikes and all that kind of stuff.
That's so nice. Okay, so I'm going to start by asking you, how did you kind of find out that fertility treatment was going to be something that you needed? What was the pathway up towards that?
So for me, we only found out through trying, and after a number of months nothing happening and obviously figuring out that something needed to happen. In hindsight, there was a lot of signs from a lot earlier, yeah, which was frustrating because we probably didn't need to go through the initial period of trying. But yeah, it was kind of 6 to 9 months in of we kind of realised something was not right.
Yeah. And are you happy to share what kinds of things that you can see in hindsight that were potential red flags?
Yeah, so from really, as soon as I hit puberty, really I started having problems, which I went to the GP for many times, around really long periods and then really short periods, pain at that time, and all that kind of classic stuff that really should have been picked up. Unfortunately, the answer was just to go on the pill, which of course masks most of that. When it was time to start trying and came off the pill, then all those things came back. But yeah, all the classic signs of polycystic ovaries.
Right. Yeah. And do you have a diagnosis of that now?
I do now, yeah.
Yeah. So can you tell us about how, how fertility treatment started for you? Like, I imagine you started off at your GP after trying for a little while.
Yeah. So I went to my GP quite early because as I came off the pill, my cycles were like, I was getting a period every kind of 3 months. So it was pretty obvious that wasn't right or normal. So
yeah,
I went to the GP pretty early and they were like, oh, keep, you know, just it takes a while sometimes for your body to adjust off the pill. So we then moved, because we were in Auckland at that point, we moved to Whangarei. And so I saw a different GP and she was much more proactive. And she referred us through the public hospital up there to see a gynecologist. So it was quite a long wait to see him. But when we did, he ordered a few tests and things, but not a lot, to be honest, knowing what I know now. And yeah, we started on clomiphene then without any kind of diagnosis or anything, which, again, what I know now, that probably shouldn't have happened, but did. So, yeah. So we did maybe 7 months of that while we were waiting, because when you're out of Auckland, you have to wait a certain period of time before you can see a fertility clinic, and they only do clinics like once a month.
Yeah.
So we had a long wait for that while we did the clomiphene, which was probably the worst part of the whole process and journey for me, because it just felt so out of control. There was no kind of process that we were given in terms of steps of what came first and what would follow or time frames. It just felt like here's the medicine, now go away and we'll see you sometime. So,
and can you just share what the reason or what's the process with clomiphene? Like, how is it meant to help?
So it's supposed to induce ovulation. It was obvious from the blood test and the fact that I was having these really long cycles that I wasn't ovulating naturally. Right. Yeah, so it's just a pill that you take. It was a while ago, so this is from memory, but I think it was kind of like from day 3 to day 8, you take one pill or something like that of your cycle, and then, it's supposed to help with ovulation.
Is it meant to sort of regulate your cycle?
Yeah, it
more?
Is.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, and so what happened from there? So you had to wait to see the clinic in Whangarei, and so did that time come around?
Yes and no. So we waited and waited and nothing happened, and then they would make the appointment and then it got cancelled, and they made the appointment again and it got cancelled again, and it's obviously a month every time at this. And so the third time that they cancelled, they told us that the road was closed and the doctor couldn't get to Whangarei, which we knew wasn't true because one of our family members had travelled down that morning. So my husband got on the phone and just lost it with them and said, "We're driving to Auckland right now, and you're going to have a doctor available for us when we get there."
Wow! So good on him.
Yes. so that's what we did, and we saw someone then, and they gave us this. They have to go through the CPAC scoring to see if you qualify for funding, for public funding. And they, within 5 minutes of being there, looked at the sheet and said, "No, you don't qualify. You need to do," I think it was, I can't even remember now, it was months and months more of clomiphene. I had not reacted. A lot of people get very emotional with the clomiphene, like it can be really tricky, and I had definitely had that experience, so I just didn't want to do it anymore. So that doctor was really helpful, and he kind of went through what we could try privately that we could pay for ourselves while still staying on that process with the public. Kind of wouldn't lose our place. So he gave us a different drug called letrozole, which basically does the exact same thing as clomiphene, but often has less side effects. So we tried that, and I did have a lot less side effects. It was a lot easier on me, but it also didn't work. So I think we did maybe 3 months on that before we decided to just try privately to go see someone again, because we were just so sick of the waiting and not knowing.
The waiting is really hard, and I think when you're in this kind of fertility world, every month just feels like an eternity, and then you have to wait another month. You kind of live your life month by month sometimes, don't you?
You really do, and it's hard because you start thinking, oh, okay, if I got pregnant this month, I'd have the baby then, so I'd be able to finish work here, and you kind of start mentally living 9 months ahead all the time, which is not good. You really kind of lose the present moment and
perspective. Absolutely. Okay, so did you then go forward with some private treatment?
So at that point we saw the doctor in Auckland who would end up doing all of our treatment, and so he was really great and kind of laid out for us the different options. And at that point we decided for what was going on with us physically, that IVF was going to be our best option. It was likely that it would go quite well in terms of my egg reserves and things like that, so it kind of made more sense, even though it was more expensive, to just jump straight to that and not kind of waste any more time or money on other treatments. So so that's what we decided to do, just to go straight to IVF privately.
Yeah, and can I just ask before you carry on and tell us about that, how did you feel about needing to do IVF treatment? Tell us how that was for you.
Yeah, I think by that point I was just so ready to do anything. I would have done I wanted to move on and just try whatever we knew would help the most. But before that, for sure, it was a process of coming to terms with the fact that we would need to do that. I think you kind of take for granted as a woman that you'll be able to have a baby like everyone else seems to be able to do. So it's definitely a bit of a grieving process, I think, for that kind of joy that you think when you start trying that, you know, you'll get pregnant quickly and it'll just be this really happy, easy, in inverted commas, kind of process. And having to come to terms with the fact that that wasn't going to be our journey, that it was going to be a lot harder, I think, was probably the trickiest part for me.
That is tricky. Okay, so do you want to tell us about your IVF cycle?
Yeah, so because we're in Whangarei again, it's quite a logistical exercise.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah, because there's no treatment offered up there at all, so in terms of IVF. So, yeah, because my cycles were so irregular, we had to do a medicated cycle, so it felt quite funny because you kind of book it in, like, we're going to start on this day. And so, we started that. We had to get, like, all the medication shipped up to Whangarei in advance and stuff.
So right.
We had just boxes and boxes of stuff in the fridge and all the rest of it. But, so we did that. There was a lot of travel to Auckland in those early days because there's obviously scans. I forget. Yeah, so I would have to, we did the first one, they said we could do them in Whangarei because it's just an ultrasound, so we did the first one in Whangarei and they looked for the wrong thing, and so we had to start the whole cycle all over again. So after that I just wasn't confident to do that,
yeah.
So we decided to drive down. So I would come by myself because obviously both of us taking time off work every few days mm-hmm. was just not realistic. So, mm-hmm. I'd have to drive down for 3 hours by myself and have a 5-minute scan and then home again. So that was definitely not something I had anticipated or really had understood, I guess. But that,
were you able to do the blood tests up north?
Yes, yeah.
We could
do the blood tests. So that was good.
Great.
Sometimes it was a bit of a problem with the 24-hour turnaround that they need, though, and had to get to the clinic really early. It was doable, so that was good. Yeah, so that initial process went really well. I responded really well to the hormones that they'd given me. And, so that was all going fine. I got incredibly bloated coming up to egg collection. Like, I looked quite pregnant, which was not fun, which was a sign of when they did the egg collection. We were incredibly lucky that we got, I forget the number, but I think it was like 22 or something. 22
oh, wow.
eggs. Yeah. Which was amazing, but also not. They were a bit worried about something called hyper overstimulation syndrome or something like that. So we had to do a freeze all of our eggs and embryos that cycle and then wait, which in hindsight doesn't seem like that big a deal, but at the time it was just another setback. It was just so frustrating. It was really a good thing to have gotten too many eggs. It was still just like, oh man, can something just like,
can it go smoothly? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So did you get the hyperstimulation syndrome?
I didn't in the end, so I got really lucky. Yeah.
Good, yeah, because that makes people really sick.
It does, yeah. Glad that they were cautious about it because, dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we froze them all. I think we got maybe 8 embryos
mm-hmm.
in the end, but those few days where they call you each day and say this many made it overnight or whatever, and like every time it halves, and it's just like, oh my goodness, like it really made me realize how lucky we were to have such a high number to start.
That was the one thing, or many things, but that was one of the things I had no idea about with this kind of treatment, that you can have a number that sounds quite good mm-hmm. and by the next day you can have half that mm-hmm. or less. Just they can just drop off so quick.
So quickly, yeah.
Yeah. So you got 8 embryos?
We did.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was. So, we froze them all that month. And then ideally they want you to wait 2 months, but just because of the time of the year and they shut down over Christmas, we were waiting like, I think it ended up being like 3 or 4 months. So because they hadn't gotten sick, they let us do a transfer the next cycle, which was really great. So we managed to squeeze it in before the end of the year. So that was really great. And unfortunately my hormones would just never level, so I was on really high doses of progesterone and estrogen the whole way through, which made me feel really sick, and I got lots of migraines and stuff. So it wasn't a very fun time. But so we put the embryo back, and about a week later I started bleeding, and so I just thought it was over, and we both mm-hmm. Got upset and cried about it, and we decided, all right, we'll give it a couple of months and try again. We're very lucky to have all these ones in the freezer. So we kind of left it. And on the day that I did my blood test to see whether I was pregnant or not, I was so convinced I wasn't. I went to work. I didn't even think about it. And they called me in the afternoon and they said, you're pregnant. And I had to, run outside because I was so emotional at work.
Aww.
And I know it was the craziest thing. And I was obviously very happy, but it was just like shock more than anything. I was just so convinced that we were done. That
it was not going to happen. Oh, yeah. That's so special. I've got goosebumps.
But then it was quite funny because I was at work, so I went out to the car park and I had to ring Mum and then ring John. And it was not exactly the kind of typical way I think people find out that they're
pregnant. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
So can you tell us, you mentioned your hormone levels were not stable. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, through that treatment process, mm-hmm. and also the time before that where you were trying naturally, how are you coping, how is your kind of emotional and mental health during that time?
It definitely wasn't good. And I can see in hindsight a lot more probably how bad it got at points, particularly during that period when we were doing the clomiphene, and we'd just recently moved to Whangarei, so we didn't have a huge support network, and you know, we both started new jobs and all that. Like, it was such an intense time in our lives, and I can see now with hindsight that I wasn't coping very well. Probably just before we started IVF, I did do some counselling with someone, which was really, really helpful.
Yeah.
I continued seeing her right the way through my pregnancy just to, keep me going. But, it's such a tricky time because you can't, well, not that you can't talk to people about it, but I think it's a hard thing to talk to people about. And so you end up kind of isolating yourself. And lots of my friends that I probably would have spoken to were either pregnant themselves or having young babies, and
yeah.
I couldn't really talk to them, or they were just like so not in that headspace at all of even wanting to try for a family that you know, they didn't really get it either. So yeah, that kind of isolation I think is really, really hard with this particular challenge of infertility. It really can be hard.
I agree. I think outside of like Facebook groups for people like this, it's really hard to find people who really understand, and basically the only way you can find that is someone who's done it or doing it. And people, friends and family, can be as kind and as empathetic as they like, but it does feel really, really isolating.
It's one of those things that's just so hard to really understand unless you've been there
yourself. I agree. Yeah. And I mean, I found that people said things that just were so hurtful, and no one was trying to be hurtful, but just people just said some really dumb things. Did you have that? Yeah.
Oh, all the time. Like, my friend was trying for a while, and then it turns out it's like 3 months. You're like, that's not a while, or
yeah.
I need to go on a holiday or not talk about it, or all these like really helpful suggestions.
People are trying to be helpful. I understand that.
Trying to put a positive spin on it. It's been a good lesson for me though, when people come to you with issues, whatever they are, if you don't understand them, is all they really need is for you to say like, I'm sorry.
Yes.
It sucks that you're going through that. And
I agree.
You don't need to.
Yeah, I agree. So did you enjoy being pregnant, Charlotte?
I did. That initial 12, well, it was a bit longer than 12 weeks that I had to stay on the progesterone and estrogen, I felt awful. I was sick. I was getting migraines like pretty much every day for most of that.
Oh, gosh.
It was not a very fun time. And I also had quite a bit of bleeding in that first trimester, which was just terrifying. Like, when you have waited so long for something and then you just keep getting these kind of reminders that even though you're kind of there, you're not really there. And so a lot of anxiety in that first trimester for sure, and really struggled to connect with the fact that I was pregnant because I just felt so awful. But within 2 or 3 days of coming off the medication, I was 100% again, which was I was very grateful for.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So the second trimester was amazing. I felt so good, and all the rest of it. And the third trimester was fine as well until the last few weeks, where I started getting a few kind of signs of the beginnings of preeclampsia, which luckily never kind of developed. Just uncomfortable. But no, I did enjoy being pregnant. I am lucky, I guess, that I don't get particularly big carrying, so I wasn't really uncomfortable or anything like that. And excited, but obviously anxious at times.
Yes.
As any pregnant person is, but particularly when you've had difficulties.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So do you want to tell us a little bit about how the birth went?
So I started getting these symptoms of preeclampsia, so high blood pressure and swelling and a few other things. And So we discussed, started talking to the OB quite early, I think maybe around 36 weeks, about whether to induce or not, and we decided just to kind of let it go and see. They kind of gave me a number for my blood pressure if it got any higher.
Right.
They would have to, which it didn't, so but they still decided at 40 weeks that we would induce, because he'd also stopped growing from the scans that they could see. So yeah, so at 40 weeks I was induced, which was a really long process. I think I was in hospital for like 3 days, and it was just so tediously boring.
Yeah,
nothing happening and you can't leave. It did eventually start to work, and they do, yeah, the whole drip of Syntocin and all the rest of it, which was, again, my body didn't respond very well to, and so I had a lot of it, and so the contractions were very, very intense. Yeah, ended up with the epidural.
Yeah.
Which luckily worked very well. and so he was born, it was a Friday morning, it was very early in the morning. It got to 10 centimetres, but I couldn't feel anything. So they asked me to start pushing, and we did try pushing for about an hour, but just, he would come down a bit and then pop back up, and then his heart rate started dropping. So they did an episiotomy and used the Vontus to help me get him out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was, when he came out, the cord was around his neck a few times, and so he was fine. It wasn't going to cause any damage, but that was why I couldn't push him out, because he was bungee jumping back.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so it was like, great, okay, well, at least we know that.
Yeah.
So he was really healthy and actually was quite a big baby. I think he was 8 pounds 7 or 8 pounds 9,
yeah,
something like that. So he probably wasn't growth restricted. It was, the scans obviously have the margin of error, but yeah. So
and what was it like to have him in your arms for the first time?
It was amazing, but it was also just so overwhelming because of the way that he was delivered. There was a lot of pain,
right,
and I also bled really heavily, so that I had him for a little bit, and then they had to take him away from me. So, and I, because I'd lost so much blood, I was like not particularly with it. So
yeah,
I can remember seeing his face, but I don't really remember anything else. My husband actually like got quite overwhelmed and had to leave the room for a part of it. And I don't remember him going. So it was a funny feeling. It was amazing to see him, but also just so overwhelming with everything else that was going on.
Yeah.
But the hospital were amazing, and they were able to stop the bleeding and stuff in the room. I didn't have to go to theatre or anything, and so I got him back quite quickly, and they left us in that room for a really long time, which is not kind of standard, and so it was really special to have a good few hours of just him on me, basically, in that space, and kind of, getting to know him a little bit and stuff.
So,
yeah, it was a bit of a slow burn, I guess.
Yeah. Lovely, though. Well, that second part of it, not the first part of it. Can you tell us how you chose Hugo's name?
Yeah, so I can't 100% remember where it came from, but we were having real trouble agreeing on something. We just couldn't find a kind of name that we both loved. And then somehow Hugo came up, someone suggested it, and we both just instantly were like, that's it. We love it so much. So, yeah, he was named quite early, but for a long time we called him Doug when he was in utero, and we hated that name. It was kind of a joke, but by the end of like 20 weeks of calling him that, we kind of got attached to it, so we almost used it as a middle name, but we decided not to.
Oh, I love his name. It's a really sweet name, and he suits it so much.
Yeah, he does.
And tell us, what were those first few months like for you as a mum once you took him home and got settled back in?
It was definitely mixed. Like, I really enjoyed being with him, and that kind of time of just him and I being at home. Like, I'm such a homebody, I really enjoyed that kind of nesting period with him.
Yeah.
But we did have real troubles breastfeeding, which became quite torturous and definitely affected my mental health a lot. And he was quite an unsettled baby in the early days. He started getting like blood in his nappies and things, and we figured out eventually that he had a dairy allergy.
Oh, yeah.
So with that and the breastfeeding being so hard, we switched to formula eventually. I think it was about 4 months, and it was just like a light came on. It was just so much easier, and I wish I had done that a lot earlier.
Amazing.
So once that was, and from when that got sorted as well, he just started sleeping like an absolute dream baby. He would sleep through the night from about that 4 month mark, and unless he was sick or teething, he's pretty much been consistent since. So I really enjoyed that initial period with him. It definitely had its challenges, and I think especially when you've had fertility troubles, that anxiety around something going wrong or that you're doing it wrong or all of that stuff is quite intense. And I definitely, in hindsight, probably should have asked for help with that earlier. Just kind of, it was pretty intense at the beginning because he was such a hard baby. But then once he was well, I kind of was getting enough rest that I could, I guess, convince myself that I was okay. But really, in hindsight, I probably was still more anxious than is typical of a mum, first time mum at that point, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you, babe. That's exactly the same. So I know you have a second child because I have met your delicious Sullivan. Mm. Tell us about, did you kind of discuss more treatment? Were you planning to have another one? Tell us kind of about how that came about.
So the second that Hugo was born, John literally said, like, I don't want to do that again because it was such an intense birth. So in a lot of ways, we were just really content with one. When Hugo was about 7 months old, we actually had a massive surprise when we found out that I was pregnant naturally. Unfortunately we miscarried that baby a couple of weeks later, which was obviously really sad, but it kind of enforced, we both, our instant reaction was that we were really excited, and so that kind of helped us make the decision that we would try for a second baby at some point. We knew we were so lucky to have all the embryos in the freezer still that
amazing,
it wouldn't be too hard a process theoretically. So so a few months later, because he was still so little, that would have been a really intense age gap, so we waited a while, and then we transferred one of our embryos, and it took again, and we were pregnant, but unfortunately again we miscarried around the same point. And
Sorry, Charlotte.
That was definitely one of the hardest parts of the whole journey, because especially the initial, when we found out we were pregnant naturally, and then to lose it, it just felt like such a slap in the face. It was like, we weren't even trying for this, and like, why, we didn't need this. We didn't need this to happen. It just felt so unfair. All that we'd kind of been through and the rest of it. And really hard to process something like that when you've got a six-month-old that needs you and you don't have time. You know, you can't just go to bed and cry about it for a few days. You just have to keep soldiering on. And it was, that definitely affected me a lot more than I even realised at the time. I think I got into that fertility treatment mentality of like, okay, well, let's just do the next treatment. Let's just do another transfer, or like just the next thing, without kind of processing the fact that like that was a baby that we had thought about and imagined coming into our family and all the rest of it.
Yeah, so have you done some processing, you know, since?
I did some counselling not long after that, and then again when I ended up pregnant with Sullivan, I went and did quite a bit of counselling around all of it, really. We transferred that one, and then when I had the second miscarriage, we went through the fertility doctors, even though it wasn't really a fertility issue, but they did some investigating and found that I had a calcification in my uterus, which was most likely some leftover placenta from Hugo after his delivery and things, which apparently is relatively common, but it's usually a very small amount, but this was quite a large amount. And so we discussed whether to have surgery or not, and we were just so overwhelmed at this point and just tired, we decided we would just take a few months to think about it. And so and then in that time frame we moved back to Auckland, and we'd been in our new house about 6 weeks, and we found out we were pregnant again.
Naturally.
Miracle.
Wow.
And We were really excited, but we were also terrified because they said if the baby implanted where that calcification was, that we'd miscarry again. So it was kind of 50-50 as to whether we would be able to carry the baby or not. And so it was really hard to kind of enjoy it, but not get our hopes up and kind of roller coaster. But we were very lucky, and he did stick around.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that is amazing. And so how was his birth? Was it similar to his brother's?
No, it was so different. It was such an amazing kind of healing experience.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much of it is luck, but I think so much of it is, for me, was feeling like I'd made the right decisions or been kind of respected in that process. And I didn't feel that with Hugo. I felt like a lot of it had kind of happened to me as opposed to being partly my decision and kind of really understanding what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found a really amazing midwife with Sally, who was just really on board with talking through what had happened with Hugo. And I just felt really kind of confident that she had my back when we went into hospital and things. And so, yeah, so I and also I was on some medication to stop the preeclampsia stuff happening again, so I didn't need to be induced. So, yeah, so I went into labour naturally about, I think it was about 3 days overdue.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, I got quite sick one night. I started vomiting and quite crampy tummy and stuff, and then I went back to bed, and then I'd kind of get a bit crampy, and then I'd think, oh man, I'm going to be sick. No, it's not that. It took me quite a few of those to think, oh wait, hang on a second, I think this might be labour starting off. So
your labour started with vomiting?
Yeah, which apparently is relatively common.
Really? Yeah. I knew vomiting could happen, but I thought it was more an established labour. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So it was quite a long, like, that was very early in the morning, and then throughout the day, it kind of got a little bit more intense. I asked John to stay home from work because I wasn't too sure, you know, timing-wise how it would go. And so at, like, 5 o'clock that night, they were getting quite intense, but I was still, like, cooking dinner for Hugo and stuff.
Right.
And then at about 6, I said to John, they got really intense quite quickly, and I was like, I think we need to go. Yep. So we did. We went to the hospital, and my midwife said to me, she was like, oh, this is going to be one of these people that's coming too early, because I'd been talking to her 20 minutes earlier and it wasn't that bad. But on the way in, like walking into the hospital, they just got super intense. And then we'd been in the room about 5 minutes and I felt like I needed to push. And so she checked and I was fully dilated already.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you did that pretty much all at home.
Yeah,
you did.
Pretty much.
Whilst cooking dinner for your toddler.
Yeah, I know. So crazy. it was amazing, but it was also like quite hard to get my head around, because with the Hugo's labour with the Syntocin, the contractions are just so intense. And so because with Sally they weren't that bad, in my mind I thought they were going to be like, oh, you're 3 or 4 centimetres, you need to go home. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so then I was kind of like, oh, wow, okay, like we're doing this, we're about to have this baby. And,
so no epidural anything this time.
Exactly, which I was not sure if I wanted one, but it's kind of nice to have it be your decision.
Yeah.
Just like that you can't. So, yeah, so that was quite intense. But again, my midwife was so amazing and just like had a really good, like, you can do this, and really helped me kind of get back in the zone. And so, yeah, he was born 45 minutes after we arrived at the hospital.
Oh, that's amazing. And I'm so pleased for you that you had what you describe as a healing birth, because I think that's really special if you can have that experience.
I think so. And I think it could have gone any way, the birth.
Yeah.
Like, I could have ended up in a C-section or anything, and I would have probably still felt the same way, just because I felt listened to and empowered and all of that stuff.
Exactly.
So important.
Yeah. And so I imagine that after the time immediately after he was born was a lot more calm than the experience with Hugo?
It was a little. He went straight onto my chest and he did that crawl thing where they crawl up and he started feeding himself, which was so amazing.
That was amazing.
So he started feeding, and then so I started bleeding again, and my placenta hadn't come out on its own, and they'd given me, because of the bleeding with Hugo, they get onto it quite a bit earlier, so they'd given me the injections and stuff to try and help it release and it just hadn't. And so, and I'd also had a bad tear again. So I'd had a bad tear with Hugo and then again this time with Sally. And so the doctor came in and had a good look and stuff. And she, we kind of knew there might have been an issue from the way they'd repaired my episiotomy and tear with Hugo because it had always been sore. Even 2 years later, it was still sore. And so, as Sullivan was being born, because everything's so stretched, they could see all the scar tissue, and so and they could see that something wasn't right. So, so the OB suggested that I needed to go down to theatre and they'd basically recut Hugo's tear and stuff as well, and just stitch it all up properly. And So I had to go down to theatre, which was a bit of a shame, obviously, to leave Sully, but he had had a feed and he was more than happy with John. So, got taken down to theatre and they did all that and I was back in the room within like an hour and a half. It wasn't obviously not ideal, but it felt, again, it was like, okay, they're taking this seriously and they're listening to me that what happened with Hugo wasn't right and something's, you know, they're fixing it and being proactive in that way. So even though it wasn't ideal, I felt good about it.
Yeah, because you've been heard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so important.
Yeah.
And tell us about choosing his name. What was the process for you guys there?
So we were totally stuck. Because we had such trouble with Hugo, and then when we knew we were having another boy, we were like, oh no, what do we do? And so someone suggested this app to us, which is called Kinder, and it's basically Tinder for baby names. We both downloaded.
I've heard of this.
It's so fun. So you swipe left and right, and you get a list at the end of names that you matched on, and Sullivan was on the list, and we just both loved it. So that's where Sully got his name.
I love that. That's so funny. And it's such a great, I love it. I love his name. Yeah. I love the long version and the shortened version. It's so cute.
Yeah, we've met two other Sullys since, which I was so
surprised
at. Yeah, and both around the same age as him as well.
Those people are swiping left and right too.
Yeah, they must be. A few people have asked if it's come from that Monsters movie, because there's a...
Of course, yeah.
Which now Hugo is very obsessed with because there's Sullivan in the movie. So it's
cute. And so what does it mean to you to have your second baby?
It definitely felt and still feels like just that complete piece of our family that we didn't really know if we needed or not. But now that he's here, it's like, that was always how it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
I felt the same when Hugo was born. I almost instantly felt like I didn't mind so much the journey we'd been on because it was obvious that Hugo was who we were supposed to meet and that's when he was going to arrive and we just had to wait for him kind of was the feeling I got from both of them. So
That's really beautiful. That's a really beautiful way to think about it. It's true. It's probably very true.
it definitely brought me peace.
that's amazing. Yeah. We're just going to talk a little bit about Hugo. I know you recently got a diagnosis of autism for Hugo. Do you want to talk us through that and in terms of what was happening for him, what kind of signs were there, and then tell us about what that's like for you and your family?
So again, in hindsight, it's easy to see stuff from very young. Even the breastfeeding thing I've learned since is not uncommon with autistic children because of the sensory sensitivities that they have. So lots of, like, starting on solids was really hard. He just wasn't into the texture. And when we did, like, messy play or wet play, he would never touch things, and like one of his first words was dirty, and he would hold his little finger up and say dirty and cry until I wiped it and stuff like that. And his speech was very limited. And then as he got older, I just noticed more and more at playgroups and stuff that he didn't interact with other children, which is not that uncommon in children that age, but more than that, he was like terrified of other children came close to him and cry and grab my leg. And it just kind of got worse and worse. And now that I know some more about it, I can see there's things like he never pointed to things, which is quite a like developmental kind of stage that toddlers will reach. He never did that. If you would like point to something and say, look over there, he wouldn't follow what you were pointing at and stuff like that. So yeah, lots of little things. But I'd spoken to the GP about it quite early, maybe when he was around 2, and just been told to wait and see. And it just didn't feel right to me. And so I spoke to another GP and they kind of said the same thing. And then I was at a Plunkett visit for Sullivan and the Plunkett nurse said to me, "How old is Hugo?" And I said, and she was like, "Are you worried at all about his language?" And I said, "Yeah, I am. And also this other stuff." And she was like, "Look, I would strongly suggest that you just be a squeaky wheel and just keep asking for a referral." So yeah, I went and saw someone actually recommended a specific GP to see. So I went and saw him and he was really amazing and referred us straight away to go see a paediatrician, which we did. And yeah, within like 20 minutes of being in that appointment, the doctor said to us that he's definitely autistic.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a bit of a shock because I'd kind of thought maybe, I knew there was definitely some sensory processing stuff going on that was pretty hard to miss that, but he is a really social child in that he's really friendly, and especially with adults he's really engaged.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I know now is like totally normal for lots of autistic people. It's described a spectrum. There's
exactly,
we just unfortunately only really hear about really stereotypical or extreme cases of it, or like what we see in the movies and stuff is just realistic. And so a lot of misinformation that I've had to unlearn and what he needs.
Mm. And so what does that look like for your family? Have you had to kind of adjust expectations or the types of things that you do to help Hugo?
Yeah, definitely. So one of his big, well, for lots of autistic children, it's just the kind of way that it's been described to me that makes sense is like everyone has a sensory cup that, is affected by too much noise or a funny texture or smell or lots of different things. And for lots of autistic people, that cup is just close to full all the time.
Right.
From things that wouldn't affect a neurotypical person really at all. And so we just have to be really mindful of how much kind of overload he's getting in terms of one of his big things is noise. So like cafes and stuff like that are okay early in the day, but there's no way we'd go in the afternoon, stuff like that. And yeah, it's definitely been adjusting expectations in terms of school and all that kind of stuff, but it's actually been a really great lesson for me as a parent in terms of meeting the child where they are rather than forcing my own expectations or kind of hopes or whatever for him. And it's not even specific to him.
We could all learn that lesson.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I just want to say, Charlotte, because I've met you a few times, you know, you talked earlier about you were waiting for Hugo and he was the one that was meant to be in your family. Well, I just feel like he was waiting for you too, because you were just so the perfect mum for him, because you're so gentle and calm. And I just know that the way you parent him will be just so in tune with what he needs. So I just want the world to know that.
That really means a lot, because it is like any parent, you're second guessing yourself all the time. But when you're walking a path that's slightly different to typical or what you expected, it's that kind of finding your confidence in that is a really big part of the process, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, we're going to finish off with two final questions. And the first one is, and you can respond to this in terms of the fertility stuff and or Hugo's diagnosis. So what have you learned about yourself through this process?
So much. Everything. It's honestly, even though both things have had their challenges, I would never take them back, because I'm just in, like, how much enjoyment I get out of life now compared to before is like, just, I'm not even the same person in a lot of ways. Just really being confronted with what matters and what doesn't, and the way that I react to good and bad, and just so many life lessons that have come out of it, and just my empathy for other people and what they're going through, and just so many things. It's it really has been life-changing, and I just know I wouldn't be enjoying motherhood in the same way if I hadn't had gone through that journey.
Oh, what a beautiful answer. Yeah. And the final question is, what does it mean to you to be a mother?
I really struggle to answer this because it just means so much to me. Yeah. It's really, especially at the moment when they're so little and I'm home with them full time and all the rest of it, it's everything to be these little people's safe place in the world and all of that stuff. But it's like, as I just said, like, they've taught me so much more than I think I'll ever teach them. It's such a special kind of relationship, I think, to bring out the best and worst in you, and then it's on you to figure out how to turn that into a learning and growth experience for yourself and therefore for them. And it's just so much more than I could ever expect of that. You know, I thought I would be kind of raising them or teaching them, but it's so not been that. It's been the other way around for sure.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Charlotte. That's a beautiful answer again. Oh, thank you so much, Charlotte, for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate you being so open about your story and sharing with us about Hugo as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I think what you're doing is just so invaluable for people, whether they're on the journey themselves or know someone, or maybe they've finished the journey but they're struggling to come to terms with it. Like, hearing other people's stories, I think, is just such a healing way to process your own feelings sometimes. So
yeah, good on you. I agree. That's what I want. That's what I want from this. So thanks for seeing that. It's amazing. Thank you, Charlotte, for sharing about your fertility journey and also about Hugo. I just know this is going to help someone out there who's listening. And I mean what I said. You are a truly wonderful mother doing the best for your beautiful boys. As always, I hope this podcast brings you hope, healing, and hugs.